This episode of Sessionable is brought to you by Dave's Travel and Events Group, who offer awesome beer experiences, including brewery tours, walking tours, and events packages. They also bring you Sydney Beer Week, happening right now, from the 20th to the 29th of October. We at Sessionable are doing our annual Beer Week podcast at the Royal Albert on the night of Monday the 23rd, so please do come along for another epic session. For the full program, hit up sydneybeerweek.com.au, and for more info on Dave's, check out daves.com.au. Previously on Style Roulette.
Okay, so we've rolled four, which is pale malty European lager.
No.
And now,
oh god,
I'll just roll to see which pale malty European lager we're going to be trying, and it is Fest Beer.
Ooh, that's interesting. And now the conclusion.
Sessionable.
Welcome everyone to Sessionable. I'm Adrian and I am joined today by Tom.
Das ist mich.
God.
That's me.
Are you going to do that all
no,
episode?
I've already done that bit before. I've already spoken German on the podcast.
Yeah, like every episode.
No, that's not true.
So we are doing our second Style Roulette episode.
The second one.
And today we are covering 4B, which is Fest Beer. And we'll also be covering a related style, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
So what are we drinking right now?
So this is the Spaten Oktoberfest Beer.
Mm-hmm.
This is an actual Fest Beer, and it is one of the beers poured at Oktoberfest in Munich. Spaten's one of the big Munich breweries.
Mm-hmm.
And this is their Fest Beer that they bring to the festival.
So the only official Fest beers are by
the six Munich breweries. They're the six at the festival at Oktoberfest.
Mm-hmm.
They're the only breweries at Oktoberfest.
Yep.
Other German breweries make Fest beers or make Oktoberfest beers, but they are not at Oktoberfest.
Yeah. What do you think of the beer?
I like this beer. I like this style of beer. I'm a sucker for German lager, as we've discussed in the past. This one's a nice malty lager, much maltier than your average Bavarian Hellers or
Pilsner.
Yeah. Which I actually think means this travels better to Australia than the other styles do. And it's tasting really nice. It's got that kind of malty, slightly nutty sweetness to it.
And it comes in just under 6%, 5.9% this one.
It's no slouch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is like, I think, a typical percentage for this style.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty smashable.
It is.
It's dangerously smashable.
And that's a big reason for my opinions on the festival, basically.
Yeah, I mean, do we want to talk about the festival now?
We can, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've been to Oktoberfest in Germany, right?
Yeah, in Munich. I went. It was a beautiful sunny day. I think it was the German National Day the same day as well.
Okay.
So it was very busy.
Yep.
And spoiler alert, I kind of hated it.
Yeah?
I was not a big fan of Oktoberfest.
Did you drink a lot of beer?
Yes, I did.
While you were there?
In
lots of 1 litre?
Lots of 1 litre.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way you can get the beer.
Yeah, that's a bit dangerous.
In 1 litre mass is the name of the glass mug,
often misreferred to as Stein.
Don't get me started on that. That's another podcast.
Yeah, next episode.
There's not a lot of water readily available.
Okay.
It was a hot sunny day.
Yeah,
we started drinking at I think 9 a.m.
wow.
We got to Oktoberfest at 6 a.m.
Okay. Was it like because of the crowds or?
To get a table.
Mm-hmm.
It was. And by midday, the place was absolutely packed and not in a nice way. There were people passed out in pools of bodily fluids everywhere. This is at midday.
Lovely.
Ambulances trying to make their way through the crowds, police, it just wasn't nice.
The emergency services must hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think it's Germans, and the thing is, it was never Germans.
Yeah, yeah.
Germans know how to drink.
Yeah.
It was always the tourists.
Yeah.
Which is frustrating. I mean, I was there as a tourist, so I can't, talk that much.
But yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on how Oktoberfest has kind of been appropriated by outside of Germany and kind of, I guess, misrepresented in some ways. I mean, you know, Oktoberfest runs until the first week of October in Germany, and we see Oktoberfest running until the end of October and everywhere else.
That's always going to happen when you have the word October in your September festival.
Yeah. It is a bit confusing.
It is a bit confusing.
Kind of like the history of this style, which we'll get to later.
Yeah. It's, as with all things German history, basically, there's a lot of weird bits where stuff happens that you don't expect it to.
Yep.
And I don't know. I think the whole commercialization of Oktoberfest is, I think it's really cool on one hand, because you do, it is a celebration of beer on the scale of none other in the world, basically.
Like, yep.
And that's pretty cool. But the second part of it is, I think the some of the cultural trademarks that have been taken from it, there's a lot of bits that are icky I'm not a huge fan of. And again, it's the thing about Oktoberfest is it's a big beer festival, but it's not about getting pissed, right? Like, that's, whereas the appropriation of Oktoberfest is about getting pissed, and that's always a bit frustrating for me.
So let's get to the style just quickly. It's a lager that's usually between 5.8 to 6.3%. Its main focus is on an aroma and a flavor that is on the malty side. So a little bit bready, a little bit toasty, but never too caramelly.
No.
Apart from that, so Fest beer in particular is a golden version.
Yep.
Of the Oktoberfest beers.
So the colour is similar to a standard pale lager, yep. I'd say.
But yeah, it is, as you said, it is more of that malty kind of of beer. A little bit more flavour to it, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Now, what we're drinking right now, which is called the Fest beer style, not actually the original OG Oktoberfest beers.
No.
So Oktoberfest, as in the festival itself, originated in 1810. The story goes that on October 12th of that year, Crown Prince Ludwig married Princess Therese of Saxe-Hildburghausen, and the citizens of Munich were invited to an epic festival to celebrate the union. There was beer, wine, horse races, costume shows, all the excitement that a 19th century Bavarian could want. The festival became an annual event, adding more and more attractions each year, and over the past two centuries has evolved into an event with a big focus on the beer. Fest beer is the official style of beer brewed for Oktoberfest, and I guess you could leave it at that, but that's only the short version. The long version is a little bit convoluted and a lot more interesting. You see, to truly understand Fest beer, you have to talk about the history of its predecessor, Mertzen. That's style 6A for those playing at home. In the days before refrigeration, beers that were brewed in the warmer European months between April and September tended to taste a bit funny. At some point, a clever chap realised that brewing a beer in March and storing it in cool caves and cellars throughout the summer made a beer that was perfect for drinking come September and October. In Germany, these beers were known as Mertzen after the month of March, or Merz. They were dark and a little bit strong, closer to modern-day Dunkels, and these were the type of beers that were first poured at the early Oktoberfests. Now, around the time that Oktoberfest was just kicking off, two brewer friends, Gabriel Sedlmayr from Spaten Brewery in Munich and Anton Dreyer from Schwekat Brewery in Vienna, were dreaming of making a German-style beer that was closer in colour to the pale ales of Britain. They would collaborate on beer-making techniques, and in 1841, Dreyer came out with a revolutionary amber beer that became the prototype for Vienna Lager. That's 7A, by the way. Meanwhile in Munich, Sedlmayr's brewing legacy was being carried on by his sons, Joseph and Gabriel II. In 1871, Joseph made a malty amber lager that was inspired by, but different from, the Vienna lager style. He brewed it again in March of the following year and brought it with him to Oktoberfest. The festival goers went nuts for it, so much so that the other breweries copied him in subsequent years, and the style eventually became synonymous with the festival itself. This malty amber lager style is what we now refer to as Mertzen, or in some cases, Oktoberfest. Now, fast forward another 100 years or so, and it was a case of history repeating itself. In the 1970s, Paul Lana, sensing a change in the crowd, who seemed to be more attracted to the paler beers instead of the traditional festival offerings, decided to make an even lighter coloured, this time golden version of the festival style. As you'd expect, it sold like malty golden hotcakes, and in the 1990s became the official style of Oktoberfest. This is the style we now call fest beer.
When we're doing our research for this episode, it turned out that a lot of the Oktoberfest beers that get exported out of Germany are actually those original Märzens, those darker amber copper beers, rather than the more modern fest beers are the ones that get exported, which I think is true in America. But here in Australia, at least this year, we've actually gotten the real fest beers for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure who exactly brings it into Australia, but yeah, we do have those.
I can tell you who does. I don't want to, though.
Oh, yeah, those guys.
Yep.
Those crafty Bavarians. Mm-hmm. So we're drinking another beer right now, and it is the Paulaner Oktoberfest beer. Now, when we bought this, we were expecting it to be
A Märzen,
but apparently it's very hard to actually get a Märzen in Australia. So this is actually a fest beer.
Yeah.
Paulaner, who pretty much originated the fest beer style in the 1970s, and it tastes almost exactly the same as the Spaten.
Yeah.
I mean, not in a bad way.
It's still a bit stronger. Yeah. 6%.
It's really smashable.
Very smashable.
Mm.
Maybe a bit lighter in malt character for me, but not a lot. You know, it's still very similar. There's not a lot to say about this style when you're drinking it, I think. The history is very interesting.
Yep.
But the beer itself is tasty.
It's very straightforward.
But it's designed to be drunk 1 liter at a time at a big festival while eating pretzels and pork knuckle and sausages and singing drinking songs. And, you know, that's kind of what it's meant to be. Like, I think the interesting part about this beer is more the experience of the beer rather than the liquid itself.
So just quickly covering the Märzen style, it is almost, you know, exactly the same as fest beer, but it is an amber copper version of that.
Yeah.
It is a bit richer in the flavor, in terms of flavor, so you get more of the toasty breadiness, but still stopping short of anything too caramelly. They're both very closely related styles, but fest beer has evolved from there to be a more kind of smashable version, even though it's still around the 6% mark.
Yeah.
And shouldn't be smashable.
And I think it's also to do with the colour of it is a big part of that. I think darker beers throw people off, not necessarily Germans, but the tourists, they think that looks too dark for me, even though the flavour's not actually that different. And so going towards something that is more pale lager coloured contributes to that as well. And when you think Oktoberfest, you know, that stereotypical image you conjure up in your head, I do think these days you picture someone holding a Mars of golden liquid, not copper.
Or like, you know, a server carrying like 10 different glasses.
Yeah, holding, yeah.
Yeah.
Seeing how many 1 liter Mars they can carry at once.
Which is pretty impressive, to be honest.
It is. And that's a, you know, pretty impressive part of being there.
So do we know of any Aussie examples of either fest beer or Märzen?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of any examples of fest beer, this beer that we're drinking now. So the lighter coloured malty lager.
Yep.
I think Aussie Oktoberfest beers tend to be more the Märzen style. So they tend to be that darker amber, copper colour, a bit richer. Because I think they're brewed by craft breweries, they kind of want to do something that's got a bit more character than this beer, which I think is a shame. I'd love to see an Aussie brewery brew something of this style. And if you're listening and you can think of an example, let us know on Facebook or Twitter or in the comments. But yeah, I can't think of anyone doing fest beers. Märzens, on the other hand, I think there's plenty of examples. So Red Hill does an Oktoberfest Märzen.
Confusingly named fest beer.
It is called fest beer, but it's definitely a Märzen. Like, looking at pictures of it, in fact, I've had it before as well. It's a Märzen.
Yeah.
I think Bridge Road does their Oktoberfest Hoptoberfest, which is a Märzen.
Yep. I think Stockade might make
Stockade do the Wanderer. Yep. So Märzen's a more easily accessible style, I think, in Australia. For us, we wanted a German example, and we fell up short.
But we failed quite spectacularly.
It is also probably worth saying that I think the classic Märzen that we've been talking about in this episode is separate from other Märzens. So, like, one of my favourite beers of all time, Schlenkerler Märzen, is absolutely not in the same style.
Yep, it's a Rauch beer.
It's a Rauch beer.
Yeah.
And it is a dark, malty lager, but it is so far removed from the Munich Märzens that we're talking about.
So, without doing any research on that beer in particular, I think they might have named that Märzen in the kind of in terms of the type of beer that was being brewed way back when, that was at the end of March, not necessarily for the, you know, I mean, there was no BJCP back then, so I think they just they just said, look, this beer was brewed at the end of March and it's ready to drink, you know, at the start of summer, that's a Mertzen, rather than saying, you know, it's a copper, amber, lager.
And I think the other thing that's important to note when talking about European examples of styles, especially when you talk about Czech, German, Austrian, Swiss, Belgian, that they are very, very regional. So one style of a beer in one town will taste different than that exact same, than the same style will be interpreted very differently the town over. So even like, you know, like Mountain or Heller's lager is different in different towns in Bavaria, and Weissbier is different in different towns. And while they might all technically be part of the one BJCP style, there's such regional variance because those breweries are so old and have been doing the way they've been doing it for so long, so much longer than there was style guidelines.
So before we get to recommendations, why don't we roll for a new style?
Alrighty, I'll get my dice here. We've actually got real dice this time.
Of course you do.
So here we go.
What did we roll?
We rolled a 24, and okay. Which brings us to, I think it's a Belgian...
Oh, Belgian style, okay.
Belgian style.
Yep.
And we're doing wit beers. Oh. 24A is what we rolled. I'm all right with that. Don't mind me a wit beer.
Yeah. I got to say, like, I was pretty disappointed when you rolled...
Fest beer
for this episode, but I have been liking lagers a lot more in the last year.
This is a really tasty lager.
And this is like, yeah, I can't fault it too much. It's great. And it was also really interesting learning about the history of this style and of Mertzen. Witbier, though, I'm not sure.
Oh, we'll turn you around in time for the next one. You can always sub out for Liam.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe I'll sit that one out.
I'm all over it, though. I'm a big Witbier fan.
Mm.
Yep. Sessionable.
You can't really talk about the history of the rocks without mentioning the beer. Fortunately, Dave's Travel and Events Group have a Rocks Pub Walk, which does that and more, leading you through the footsteps of the convicts, gangs, and locals of the past as you share a drink in four of Sydney's oldest pubs. It's like a historical walking tour, but with beer. For more information, check out daves.com.au. So, let's get into recommendations.
Alrighty, what do you want to do first, beer or non-beer?
Let's go for beer.
Okay, you can go first.
Yeah, sure. So, keeping with the German theme, Bucket Boys has started recently bringing in some German craft breweries, and I had the Crew Republic Roundhouse Kick Imperial Stout.
Yep.
Really fucking good.
That's a beer that I have some fond memories of.
Yeah.
I drank quite a bit of that when I was over in Bavaria.
Yeah, cool. I think it's appropriately named. It kind of kicks you in the face.
Yeah.
And very subtly, because it tastes so good, it hides the alcohol well, but after a couple, you're
on the floor.
You're on the floor.
Yeah. It is very tasty. I've been enjoying it very much. So I was very sad when it ran out the other night.
So if you can get your hands on it.
But yeah, Bucket Boys, I think.
Bucket Boys bring that in. Might have it.
I remember there was a sports bar in Regensburg where I was living, and on my birthday we went there, and they had a special on that night, bucket of beers for €10.
Yeah.
It's like, sweet, which beers can we get? They're like, oh, any beer in the fridge. And they had the whole Crew Republic range.
Yeah.
Including... The Roundhouse Stout. And whoever, the bartender didn't know that that was a 10% Imperial Stout. So we were drinking €10 buckets of that beer. So, you know, four
Jesus.
Beers. It was a big night. That bar's name was called Frankie's.
Oh, of course it was.
All right. My recommendation is it's an NEIPA. It's probably the one that I've been enjoying the most recently just because it's probably the most easily accessible for us.
Yep.
It's the Feral Biggie Juice.
Okay.
Which I'm pretty sure we haven't recommended on the podcast
I think
yet.
We've mentioned it.
But I don't know if we've recommended
But we don't it. Think we've... I don't think we've recommended it.
I've been hitting that quite a bit.
Me it's too. It's just really Me too. Yummy.
And they seem to be brewing it pretty regularly because there's often fresh kegs around. So
yeah.
Hit up your local craft beer bar and see if they've got it.
Yeah. So they first brewed it for Good Beer Week and now it's a semi-regular, which is really cool. It's very, very... Juicy,
very juicy,
as they call it. So, like, very fruity on the nose. Not a lot of bitterness on the back.
Yeah, I think it's one of the truest to style in Australia so far.
Yeah, I mean, I had somebody come in the other day saying he'd just come from Brooklyn in the US, and New England IPAs were very prevalent there. And
ooh, yeah.
This was actually a very good
yeah.
version of that style. So, you know, that's pretty high praise.
Yep. You got a non-beer?
Yeah. So back in July and August, there is this yearly tournament from New Japan Pro Wrestling called the G1. And it's basically all the best heavyweights go in this 1 month long round robin tournament. 10 wrestlers each block, and they fight pretty much every day for the next month. It's fucking brutal. New Japan's well known for their so-called strong style. Yeah, so it's this really cool kind of round robin tournament, and the winner of each block of 10 wrestlers fight each other in the final, and the winner of that gets a title shot at Wrestle Kingdom, which is New Japan's version of WrestleMania.
Okay.
So that's not my recommendation.
Okay.
So I was in a
setup.
I was in a tipping competition to predict the winners of each match.
Okay.
During this whole tournament.
Yep.
Also not my recommendation. I ended up winning that tipping
there
competition.
You go. Well done.
I don't recommend gambling at all, but because I won, you know, $150 or whatever it was, I decided to spend my winnings on wrestling related things. And I subscribed to this British pro wrestling, independent pro wrestling streaming service called Progress, or they call it Demand Progress, but it's Progress Wrestling. And that's my recommendation.
Okay.
Really fucking good.
Long winded, but yeah.
It combines the kind of athleticism and drama of US wrestling with the strong style of Japanese wrestling.
Okay.
With the kind of humor of, you know, British people. It's run by a stand-up comedian, so
yep.
It never takes itself too seriously. The crowd reactions are so fucking cool. It's like one of the best wrestling products I've seen in years. So that is, that is my recommendation.
Okay.
Progress Wrestling, Demand Progress. It's only about 10 Australian dollars a month. Really worth it.
Okay. Because you've gotten me into a wrestling podcast that I'm starting to listen to.
Okay.
Produced by the ABC. I don't watch wrestling at all, though.
Yeah.
But I enjoy this podcast. It's well made and it's funny and it's, you know.
Is that your recommendation?
No. I was just bringing that up.
Okay. Let's just mention it anyway.
Yeah.
Behind the belt.
It's very good.
Really good.
That's not my recommendation, but it's very good. My recommendation is pretty nerdy, but also very good. It's the new series of Star Trek Discovery on Netflix.
STD.
STD. Yeah. No, I think it's just called DIS. Like, if you're going to, it's DIS.
STDIS.
STDIS. It's, yeah, new Star Trek series, which is the first new one since Enterprise finished. I think probably a decade ago, wasn't it?
I think we were watching it drunk yesterday, and I don't really remember much.
You were heckling it hard.
I don't know how I got so drunk.
I think Finette and Whiskey were involved.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
So Star Trek Discovery, very good. It's a prequel to the original series, so it's set before the original series. They've given it a lick of, you know, a fresh lick of paint, so it's all shiny and new, and it looks, you know, very schmick. But it's very good, really good characters, some great characterizations, some great Star Trek style storytelling.
Yeah.
It is different though, so they are kind of taking it forward. It kind of feels like it's more in the Deep Space Nine mold of storytelling, which I think is a good thing.
More like a modern TV style.
And a bit less utopian than all the Roddenberry stuff.
Yep. That's a Brian Fuller series, right? Is he no longer involved?
He's no longer involved. Okay. He was attached.
Right.
He developed it.
Yeah.
And then he left. So he's not the showrunner, but he sort of developed the story and the style. And
okay,
the,
cool.
So he is still, his influence is still in there.
Yeah.
But it is not a Brian Fuller show.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. But it is very good. And there's some great actors in it and some great characters, some great Star Trek-y characters. And if you're a Star Trek fan, and even if you're not, it's not a bad place to jump in. Because you don't need to know much. All you need to know is that the Federation is, like, good and the Klingons are bad. And that's kind of, that's what you need to know, basically.
Yeah. Cool. I guess that wraps it up. We will get back into Style Roulette in the near future, hopefully. Yeah. But please do, if you have time, please do rate and review us on iTunes. And you can find the podcast at Sessionable Pod on Twitter, Sessionable Podcast on Facebook, and at sessionable.net. Catch you later.